Welcome to the Consulting Pipeline Podcast. Today I speak with Derek Dysart, and I think the interview with Derek is super interesting because, in a way, he arrived at a specialization the exact opposite way a lot of people do. So I give, intentionally, on purpose, I give a lot of airtime on this show to the difficulty, the challenge, and how people overcome that challenge of deciding how to specialize. I really do believe that for a lot of folks, it is this sort of gut-wrenching decision because for most, it looks like a high-stakes, low-data decision. And those are always just the hardest ones to make, where you feel like stakes are high, you don't know enough, and just put anybody in that situation for the first time, and they're probably going to feel some stress as a result of that situation. And, for a lot of folks, that's really how the specialization decision looks, but not everybody. And Derek is a great example of someone who has found a great specialization, and it's working really well for him. It's opened up opportunities for retainer work, really, really profitable work. But how he arrived there was not a gut-wrenching struggle at all. It was just doing what he'd always done. Just on his own and building that up. So I want you to hear the story so you know that not every decision about how to specialize is a gut-wrenching, stressful decision, and B, so that you can see that there's lots of ways that people arrive at this point of having a really clear specialization, and Derek's is a great example of one of those ways. Enjoy. Hey, look at that. We're recording. Derek, glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So, Derek, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Derek Dysart. I am an independent software developer that specializes on an enterprise content management system called Sitecore. It's based on the .NET platform, so the Microsoft .NET platform, and is typically kind of runs in the really large brand space. It competes, their closest competitor is Adobe Experience Manager. Its licensing cost is measured in 6 to 7 figures. It's not a inexpensive platform as things go, but it's kind of been where I've been working with the platform for probably 8 years now, 3 of those on my own.
For folks who don't have any visibility into this world, where when they think CMS, they think WordPress,
right?
What are the key differences between something like WordPress or Umbraco in the .NET world and Sitecore?
Yeah, sure. So Sitecore, they pitch themselves as a kind of a marketing platform. So there's, it's kind of grown organically. They built out, it's got an email campaign manager portion to it. It's got, it does quite a bit of marketing automation. So where a larger enterprise might go with a product from a company like Marketo or something like that, a lot of that is kind of built into the content management system. So, and quite honestly, they have kind of 3 different portions of it. Content management is one portion, and kind of the analytics processing and doing personalization is another. So being able to really deep dive personalization based on user interactions, based on historical analytic data. And then finally, they also have a commerce piece that they've been slowly rolling out. That's again, kind of targeted at high end, kind of high end e-commerce.
Okay. So it sounds closer perhaps to an enterprise version of HubSpot maybe than anything.
Yeah. I'm not as familiar with kind of the, and we can kind of get into how I got onto this platform, but I really only know it mainly from kind of the main competitors, where they get ranked in Gartner and all that. And it's, but yeah, it's definitely very similar. It's marketed as kind of a one-stop shop for, global brand, digital marketers to kind of have a one view of the customer. And the other part that they've recently introduced is now you can feed analytics from non-websites into it. So you can have point of sale systems, you can have CRM systems feeding analytic data into a customer record, and then be able to personalize the website based on offline interactions. They just released a large package on that. So that's it's very inclusive in what it does. So comparing it to WordPress is just, you know, WordPress is a great it's a great CMS, and it serves its purpose at its price point. But you know, larger brands that want to do that level of personalization, kind of quickly, you quickly end up bolting on tons and tons of different plugins, tons and tons of different plugins to WordPress in order to make that work.
Can you give an example of just a few sort of household name brands that might use a product like Sitecore?
Yeah. So Sitecore, I think they're big marquee clients. They talk about L'Oreal. They talk about Nestle. So globally, in the U.S., you have larger brands like GE Healthcare. I'm trying to think of Carnival Cruise Lines is another one they always talk about. We have Stanley Black & Decker, which is an overarching brand for a bunch of different tool brands. I'm trying to think of other ones off the top of my head. But yeah, it's kind of larger global brands such as that. I believe Honda and Honda America. It's the Honda site, the Acura site, Honda owners, and all that. That's all running on Sitecore as well.
Okay. Cool. So let's. In a Slack chat room that we're both members of, I sort of caught a glimpse of what your life must be like, your work life, as somebody who specialized in Sitecore. I'm just kind of hoping you'll sort of share what that is. Like, how do you make money? What kind of consulting work do you do? That sort of thing. You don't have to share numbers, but just kind of get a sense of what your business is like.
Yeah, it's definitely been evolving over the past couple of years. I started out, if I go way, way back, I worked for Microsoft and their services organization kind of right in the early 2000s. It was part of the .NET platform when it was released. Worked a lot with Microsoft and customers.
Did you work for MCS? Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, I did. I was in MCS for part of that time, and then it was part of Premier Support. Okay. Premier Support was more kind of an account manager type. Definitely had a lot of technical responsibilities. Quickly moved into the web world, and kind of always had this, like, I wanted to be a freelancer. I wanted that freedom. And ultimately, I left Microsoft, mainly just, there's a multitude of reasons. It was a great company to work for, but it just didn't fit, it didn't fit in my life at the time. Mm-hmm. And worked for a smaller organization, in the locality here, and ultimately got laid off from there during the downturn. One of their larger customer, one of their largest customers was AIG, which obviously fared very well during the downturn. And so I kind of was like, hey, now's a perfect time to go freelancing. And I had really no idea how to value myself at all. And kind of bounced around, really kind of, I would say, I think the kind way to put it is very unprofitable work.
Yeah.
And ultimately landed, a friend of mine was working at a digital agency in town, and they had a need for someone with .NET experience. And, they were using this new thing to them called Sitecore. So I came on board, and was ecstatic at the time to be, to be billing out at like $60 an hour. I was like, wow, I've made it now. And they ultimately, I worked on that project, We launched that site, and they really wanted me to stay on as a full-time resource. Made me an offer that, on paper, I was like, that's kind of a pay cut, but I like the clientele that they're working with. I want to stay with it. So I took that position, and then I kind of moved up in management there. Had a few developers working, and kind of saw what we were paying other freelancers, and realized at the time, like, wow, they were really getting a good deal out of
me. Nice.
But at the time, it like built up this Sitecore expertise of kind of like, that was all the projects that we were doing. It was building out these websites for various, various customers of that agency. And then kind of, it came to a point where, I could have moved into upper management there, kind of interviewed for it, kind of got passed over for someone else. That happened a couple times, and I realized, like, it's time to find something new. And I had a bunch of other people that were like, you should really go out on your own. In the meantime, I'm getting hounded by recruiters. If you for a while, and it's not as much now, but I know for a long time, if you had the word Sitecore on your LinkedIn profile, you were guaranteed. And I'm not exaggerating. I think in a 2 week span, I had probably 24 recruiters hit me up for various positions, and they were obvious. You know, you get some positions, you can tell, like, that's the same position. They just kind of farmed it out to a bunch of contract recruiters. But this was, I knew there was a market out there, was a massive demand for kind of people that understood this platform. Sitecore was kind of taking off from a sales standpoint. And so,
can I interrupt you right there, Derek? Yeah. What time frame are we talking about here?
This was probably about 4 years ago now. So that would be 2012. I'm bad at math. 2014. And then in the meantime, I had people being like, "You should really go on your own."
Yeah.
And ultimately, I had a few people that were like, you can find the work, just find something. And my first gig leaving that full-time position as a contractor was what I would like to call it. I was a subcontractor. So I was a 1099 position for another, potentially you call a competing agency, and did a fair amount of work like that where, you're not getting, I know that they're turning around and marking my rate up, and I guess I was okay with that.
Sure.
But in the same sense, I probably spent a good year doing subcontract work for other digital agencies. And Sitecore has its, what they call a partner. It's kind of an ecosystem of partners of various different, I wouldn't call them digital agencies, or like digital consultancies that specialize in that platform. So there's several of them worldwide. I worked for several of them in the North America area, and did a fair amount of work that way. The thing that really I had a hard time with that is, in hindsight, you can kind of say you're not getting a good rate because somebody else is marking that up. But it was the thing I honestly missed was kind of the direct customer interaction. I mean, somebody else owned that customer relationship.
Right.
And I had several where they were like, "Wow, this guy," they were really, they knew I wasn't kind of just a technical person. I could interface with customers. I could talk to them and talk to them on a level that, maybe they're not. You have a digital marketer or a head of marketing or even chief marketing officer that's trying to understand this from a business standpoint, and they don't really care about the various libraries and all that you're using. And so slowly I started transitioning to, I had people reaching out to me again through LinkedIn, but instead of recruiters, these were people that were in marketing departments at places that were actually using Sitecore as well, of like, "Hey, we're looking for an independent Sitecore person. We're tired of working with these big agencies, or we don't have a huge need where we need an army of 20 developers. We really just need someone we can call for maintenance and stuff like that." So that's kind of where my business started, as kind of subcontracting, and slowly over the course of probably, I'd say that, subcontracting was like the first year. The second year was predominantly, I would say 50-50 between maintenance and, kind of doing, I end up being kind of the IT department for a marketing organization. They don't have any developers on staff, but they need small tweaks to their, to their website. So I understand Sitecore. And then there was some subcontracting, and now I've completely switched where I've got a few maintenance clients, and now I've gotten, I'm more involved with customers who have purchased Sitecore. They've got developers on staff, so they're not farming out the work to a large implementer. But they need, they need someone that's kind of got architectural level knowledge of the product, can help their developers get up to speed, be on call to answer questions. And so I think the conversation you were alluding to earlier was one where, I've moved more and more towards kind of doing retainer style work, where it's it's an agreement. You can sign up for a number of months. It's got a monthly, it's a price per month of you can access me, via email, phone. Some I have, I'm in their corporate Slack. You can get a hold of me then. I'll return that message within a 24-hour period. Oftentimes a lot faster than that. And that has tended to work well for several companies that I work with.
So that's an awesome overview. I want to circle back to various points along the way, and pull out some more detail that's interesting to me.
Sure.
How long did it take you to feel like you had some sort of mastery of Sitecore, that you, as you were learning, working for agencies and so forth?
Yeah. I wish I could quantify it. I can tell you the time that I did, I ended up talking to somebody at Sitecore support, or they might've been their support organization or their professional services. We had hired, I think he was with professional services at the time. And this, you know, in the kind of the ecosystem of Sitecore, he was, you know, he's like one of those legends or something. And I'm trying to liken it to someone else of like, you know, if you're in web design or something, like it would be somebody like a Jeffrey Zeldman or something like that, where
okay.
It's like this person knows this domain of knowledge in and out. And I remember having a conversation with him, trying to explain the problem we were solving and the approaches I've taken. And I felt like I could, you know, I was talking that guy's language, and then he was talking his language back to me, and I knew it, you know, then it was like, okay, I'm all, you know, it was one of those that I'm like, okay, I do understand this platform. I'm not faking it anymore. I actually do know what's going on.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So you felt like you had sort of become a peer of someone that you respected a lot and the community respected a lot. And you saw yourself as, at least technically, as equals, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And I would say, that probably took me probably a good, I would say, you know, I had a strong .NET base behind that. So it wasn't, you know, I wasn't, you know, if I were to go and I know there's gotta be CMSs based on something like Rails or on Django or something like that, where I think I would have, you know, I would have a huge learning curve of picking up something like Ruby or Python. Whereas like I knew C# backwards and forwards. And I used to joke with recruiters, they'd be like, how many years of .NET experience do you have? And I'm like, I have all of them. And like I've been working with the platform since it was in beta. So that wasn't so much, it was the kind of the domain knowledge of the product itself. And I think historically I've always been, and it's one of those, as you grow older, you realize what you're good at. And I was always good at figuring things out, how it works. I remember early in my career, I worked with a billing system. I can't remember what platform it was. I knew it had an Oracle backend, but by the end of it, like I knew when somebody entered something on this screen, it ended up in this table, and all the tables had weird names like MDS, RR tab. And, you know, they were all, none of them had any intuitive names at all, but I had done enough kind of digging through the guts of the system that I finally understood it. And that was kind of how I felt with Sitecore.
Interesting. So, how did you move into architectural work? Did you have, like, was that something where you said, I think I can do this, give me the opportunity, I'll do it, or did it unfold some other way?
Yeah, I think it was just kind of a, hey, we needed, you know, the task, one of the first tasks I remember working on was we were implementing search on this site, and they were actually using a separate product from Sitecore to do the indexing. And it was mainly because the site we were implementing had to handle, I can't remember how many languages it was. It was probably close to two dozen languages. Mm. And it included you know, Chinese, Japanese, Korean characters, as well as Cyrillic characters. And the native indexing system in Sitecore just doesn't handle non-Western character sets all that well. So they had bought this product that did that, and nobody knew anything about it. So they're like, A, you got to figure this out, and got to B, figure out where is this going to fit in architecturally. And so that it was thrown into the fire, so to speak. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like me holding my hand up of like, hey, I'd like to do some architecture now. It was just, we only had so many people on the team, and everybody just kind of had to step up and get it done.
I see. So when you're speaking with a prospective client, what kind of, do you see them kind of flip at some point from questioning whether you can really do it to really trusting you? Do you see some kind of transition like that in the conversation?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I do. And I know the follow-up is how.
Yeah, right. Yeah, what does that look like?
Or? Yeah, and I'm trying to think of what it is. I think a lot of it is just, it comes with, I think, having confidence in knowing what you're doing. And I think that's, that you know, for somebody else listening out there, that could be hard. Especially, you know, everybody's always got that kind of imposter syndrome kind of nagging in the back of their head. Yeah. And it's, you know, maybe it comes with time that goes away. It's still there. But confidence begets confidence, and, you know, pretty soon if you believe in what you're saying, that comes through, I think, in the client conversation.
Do you think you could, I'm going to ask this in a funny way, but it's a serious question. Do you think you could fake that, or does the confidence for you come from the fact that you've really been around the block a couple times with Sitecore?
Well, there's two things. I think you can fake it, but it's pretty easy to tell when somebody is, especially if you have somebody that's a bit more savvy than you. And I think the other part that I personally do is, you know, a customer asks like, hey, does Sitecore do this, or can it do X, Y, and Z? And if I don't know the answer, I'm not shy about saying like, you know what? I don't know. Like, I've heard that it might be able to do that, but I've never done an implementation like that, or I've never worked with that portion of the system. I guess I'm not shy to kind of be vulnerable of like, no, I don't know everything, but I'm really good at figuring it out.
I think that there's a lot of perceptions. It sounds like most of your clients are, you know, Fortune 1000, Fortune 500 type companies. Is that about right?
Yeah, I would. That's probably a fair assumption.
Okay. There's, I think, a real perception among people who haven't worked with those types of companies that, you know, you've got to be some kind of super person to get work with those companies. Have you found that to be true, or are they just kind of normal people, or what's it like?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing is, you know, like you think of these iconic brands, and I've never been shy about approaching people like that. I at a conference, I walked right up to, it was the head marketer for a large fast food chain here in the U.S. And it was just like, hey, how did you guys go about doing this? And it's, you know, they're just normal people. You know, so that's never been, you know, there's never been, you know, hesitation on that side. And again, it's like, I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think that confidence and having that confidence to be able to talk about that is definitely, you know, is definitely helpful. I think, you know, if you're dealing with Fortune, you know, there are certainly, you know, clients running Sitecore that will look at it and look at my organization, in my business, and be like, you know, we don't want to work with him because it's a single person, or, you know, I do have subcontractors that work for me from time to time, but sure. They're like, it's a small organization. You know, what if, heaven forbid Derek gets hit by a bus, or
right.
The less morbid one I heard once was like, what if Derek wins the lottery? Which is like, it's a little better than getting hit by a bus, at least for me. And, so there are, you know, organizations that are like, we don't want to work with someone like that because of that risk. Mm-hmm. You know, these larger organizations are risk adverse, but in the same sense, I think, you know, they're not much different than working with smaller organizations. It's just a person usually. And again, I think, you know, if I had to say anything, I'm selling the confidence that, you know, you're trying to figure out Sitecore. I know it. And if I don't know that part, I know how to figure it out, or I may know someone that knows it and be able to get you that information. Mm.
You have buyers who are seeking something other than that large agency with a deep bench. What leads them to do that, to want somebody small and, I guess, nimble and, you know?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I guess it is something I honestly struggle with, because I think to date, I've done almost zero marketing of my organization. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those where I kind of backed into, you know, like seeing that there was a huge market need for this out there. I had people just kind of, you know, I was doing subcontracting work. I wasn't, you know, like I was deliberately like, I got to get rid of all this subcontracting work. Stuff came through the woodwork of like, hey, we need someone. Can you handle, you know, 30 hours a month of maintenance work? I'm like, yeah, you know what? I can fit that in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get two or three of those together, and then one of those is like, hey, you've done so much great work with this maintenance. We'd love to redesign the site, and here is, you know, 4 months worth of work as opposed to, you know, 30 hours a month.
Right.
And, you know, you get a couple of those, and it's like, now it's like, hey, this business is real.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I don't know what it is. I think a lot of them are, you know, it's, I don't like saying that it's on price, but I'm definitely a lot cheaper than going to a huge organization like an Avanade, that's going to charge, upwards of $190 to $250 an hour, where they're like, a lot of times, it started out with clients where it's like, we don't have a need for this huge project team. We just need someone we can pick up the phone and ask a couple of questions. And then, showing value on that over time. And, I have one customer that's been in place for almost 2.5 years now. And that's exactly what I'm there for is, hey, we're thinking about, we're doing another site. Can we ask you some questions? And that's kind of what's coming at.
What have you noticed about the buying cycle in these larger organizations? How long does it take for a process?
Man, I would say I had one client that I knew, is a brand I really respected. I really wanted to work with them and I knew they had a need for Sitecore. I knew they were really struggling with it. And that one took almost 9 months to close. Mm-hmm. And I would say it runs the gamut, but it's definitely measured in months, not days. And it's, it can take quite a while. Mm-hmm. Like I said, that one was like 9 months and, there was like in hindsight talking to them, they took that long because they had a lot of different organizational shakeups. The team that oversaw the website was moved out of IT into marketing and now marketing had developers working for them. So there's a lot of management changes and stuff like that. But I would say it's a good 3 month cycle easily. Yeah.
How many meetings do you need to have with different people at a client over the course of trying to close a sale?
Yeah, I would say it's not, I don't know. I consider myself lucky because it's not a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's a call. Maybe a follow-up call, making sure that there are, if it's marketing, bringing in a technology resource, allaying some fears with IT that, I know what I'm doing. I'm not just, I'm not going to come in and mess up all their systems. I'd say 2 or 3, not any more than that.
Okay. That sounds remarably not bad to me, on the easy side of things.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Cool. So you said you don't market yourself at all, and that sometimes that means people have a really narrow view of marketing. Do you really not do anything to promote your services or make new people aware of them or ask for referrals or anything like that?
Yeah, I guess when I say that, I don't do any explicit kind of outbound marketing right now. So a lot of the circles, I think you and I, at least I follow you from a standpoint of kind of a lot of the broader industry of folks kind of targeted at freelancers. And uh-huh. I'm not doing any explicit outbound marketing. I don't have an email list I'm marketing to. Mm-hmm. It's definitely something I've thought of, but it's just been, I've had enough work where I can barely fit that in.
Yeah.
So it's, but I, in terms of kind of outbound reach, and like I do, I run a local meetup that is targeted at both developers and marketers that specialize on the platform. Mm-hmm. I coordinate that with a couple other, Sitecore professionals in the area. I do attend conferences. I haven't presented at a conference. There has been a couple virtual conferences that people have put on. Okay. Presented at those. I've submitted papers to conferences. So far I haven't, one of the things I like doing is I love public speaking. It's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely one of those introverted people, but it's something, so somewhere along the way that nervous energy you get before getting in front of a crowd actually, and I've read about this before too, is it turns, people that end up liking public speaking they still have that nervous energy. They just turn it into excitement. Uh-huh. And not fear. But I do that. And I do, I probably about a year ago, I did start my own podcast focused, the original goal of it was to have it be kind of a lead gen magnet for folks in Sitecore. And quickly what it kind of devolved into is more of just being present in the community. It, the target audience for the podcast basically didn't end up becoming the person that would buy my services. It's more kind of sharing with the community and being out there. of kind of, you know, Sitecore and folks in the Sitecore community will talk about it. It's got a very tight-knit community of developers that, you know, could easily say, you know, you work for the competitor, but everybody's kind of, it's there's more sharing going on than I've seen in open source projects, in terms of like everybody helping each other out. So it, quickly, my podcast kind of turned into more of giving back to that organization, just trying to, you know, shed a light on work that other people are doing. So my goal originally was to start it kind of as a lead gen thing, but it quickly devolved into just kind of disseminating knowledge out.
Or maybe evolved. I understand what you're saying. It serves a different function now than when you started it. Yep. So, okay, so that's interesting. So you're active in the community, but you're not doing a lot of the things that people think of as marketing activities. In other words, you have a presence, but it's not like sort of a mercenary sense of like, I'm going to go out there and get a bunch of leads and that kind of thing.
Right.
Okay. So this is a question that I would not like to be asked, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What would you do if demand for Sitecore just tanked suddenly?
You know, I think about that a lot, actually, because it's one of those that I've talked to several people that are also kind of specialized in Sitecore, and it's like one of those that, like, when is this wave going to crest?
Right.
When is this, you know, because it's, before you and I started recording, I was telling you, this is kind of, I know it's one of those, or it's a skill set that's one of those, like, you could liken it to being an iOS developer, say, I don't know, like 6 or 8 years ago when App Store opened out, and like people couldn't find iOS developers fast enough. Yeah. And I feel like Sitecore's been like that for a good 5 years now. And you know, myself being someone with, you know, I can say I've worked on this platform for 8 years. It's been everything that I've done. You know, if I fast forward, say 5 years, the difference between somebody that's got 5 years of experience and now like 10 years of experience, that delta is not as much. So you know, it's definitely something I've thought of. I think, you know, having read your material, I think I would definitely look at moving out of a horizontal specification, moving out of a horizontal specialization into more of a vertical specialization of trying to find some vertical industry, one that I hopefully have a little bit of knowledge of, and try and go that route. I definitely see the benefits of that specialization. It's, you know, and I've seen it from other folks that have done that just in the different Slack teams I'm in, where people say, you know, I focus on yoga studios, and, you know, somebody else that we both know, Jonathan Stark, will talk about these Rolodex moments that people have, like, oh, you do yoga. You know what? My sister-in-law owns a yoga studio. And I definitely believe in that. So I think, you know, Sitecore goes away, I think I would probably try and shift more into some sort of vertical specialization. What that specialization is, I don't know, but it's definitely been in the back of my mind.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was curious how you would approach making that decision. Yeah, I mean, I hope that never happens. I hope that you're able to, you know, just ride this Sitecore wave for as long as you care to.
Yeah.
But I was curious how you would approach that decision. Let me shift into sort of acting like a specialization consultant here, because I'm just curious, are there verticals where Sitecore is maybe overrepresented in that vertical, or the type of experience that you've gained working with Sitecore is particularly valuable in that vertical? Like you mentioned L'Oreal. Is cosmetics one of those verticals? Or
yeah, the one that I do see, you know, as I kind of see where Sitecore do kind of, hey, you know, here's that they do a site of the year award every year. And I look at, you know, just talking to people of like, hey, you know, who site are you working on these days? And it's kind of, you know, says it in confidence, but I would say it seems that a lot of kind of health organizations have specialized on it. So, you know, I've personally done work with a number of different hospitals, both locally and I know I've talked to other folks where there seems to be a lot of kind of hospital organizations that are standardizing it on it as a platform. So, you know, healthcare is one. I'm trying to think of other ones. That's the only one that kind of comes to mind offhand. I do know it's very popular in the ski resort industry. So I know another big brand that uses it is Vail. They're kind of the 800 pound mm-hmm. gorilla in that industry, but mm-hmm. you know, there are other places like Winter Park and Aspen Snowmass, and they're all using Sitecore for their sites. So that's probably another vertical. Those are the only two that kind of come to mind.
So earlier you identified some of the strengths of Sitecore that overlap with business needs, things like content personalization on the website. You can look at that from a technical perspective, and you can look at it from a business perspective. Mm-hmm. So if you frame that as what's the business benefit of content personalization that integrates with your point of sale system and incorporates all this data, what business benefit does that produce? Is it really just kind of more revenue per customer or more revenue per site visitor? How does the business side think about it?
I think it drives conversion. And I think talking with a lot of folks, oftentimes it's steering people through what exactly is conversion then. Mm-hmm. On an e-commerce site, I liken it to, on an e-commerce site, conversion is really easy. Somebody viewed the receipt page mm-hmm. and then, you can pull the order total off of that page and said, whatever actions we did on the website drove someone to buy X amount of, dollars in revenue. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some of them are a little bit more difficult, and it's honestly a journey I end up having with a lot of folks. Of they're like, we need a website, and we want to have the most bells and whistles. But when you ask that question of like, what do you want your visitors to actually do? A lot of times maybe it's just they want them to download a white paper, or they want them to browse product information, or they want them to request a quote on an insurance policy, or they want them to, schedule a demo for some software, or, in the case of like a ski resort, they want them to book a lift ticket. Maybe that lift ticket system isn't on Sitecore. It's another system, but now we've triggered something that said, yeah, they've actually done what we want them to do on the website.
So if we kind of abstract away the Sitecore specific elements of that, it sounds like the business facing value of your skill is really relevant to the marketing organization within, mm-hmm. And it has a lot to do with conversion rate optimization or taking data across a gazillion channels and making sense of it, something around business intelligence or CRO, right?
Yep, definitely.
Okay. Interesting. I do that, like I kind of wanted to do that live for the benefit of the folks at home who are listening to this so they can maybe start to think, oh, there's two ways to look at what I do. There's the technical skills, there's the platform I work with, and then there's the business value. And sometimes I think you're making that transition, hopefully again, you'll never have to, or right. at least if you do it, it'll be on your own timing and not in a reactionary way. But I think that's part of that process is saying, okay, what are the skills that I have that have real value? And then what's a vertical I can find where those skills are in demand?
Well, and definitely being able to do that. I mean, like you said, it's a lot of that is just even that thinking of pushing someone through that thought process of, I remember I worked, this was not on Sitecore, but I worked with a furniture store once. They, they wanted to update their website. They wanted to redesign. And, and I was trying to just even from a very simple SEO standpoint, think of like, you're going to want, copy on this page. It's, that somebody's looking for a couch, and they stopped me right there. So we don't sell couches. We sell sofas. I'm like, your customers are going to come here buying a couch. And it was if you've done anything in kind of user experience or user centric design, like that's, yes, that makes sense. But like to this business owner, like you could literally see something, some gear turn 180 degrees. Like, oh my gosh, I get it now. Like, it's not about like, I'm going to educate you why we don't call them couches. We call them sofas. Of like, no, I'm just going to tell you, we have things that you might call a couch and you can buy them here. And here's this nice selection of them. And then we'll educate you when we get in the store. But that being able to do that, I think is very platform independent. You could move that into a vertical skill set quite easily.
Yeah.
Being able to break that down. But like I said, it's, walking a lot of these marketers through like, okay, what are the actual goals of your website? that's you know, there's that, there's value in that, no matter if you're on WordPress or if you're on Umbraco or you're on a Adobe Experience Manager.
It sounds embarrassingly simple when you phrase it that way, doesn't it?
The devil's in the details of one. So like, okay, great. This is what we want them to do. Now, how do we do that? Then that's where the, you know, that's where the fun begins. But
yeah,
even the, you know, there's value in doing that exercise. Cause I don't know if a lot of marketers think through that. They get so, so embroiled in all the marketing technology stuff of like, yeah, then we're going to have these contact forms that automatically post to Salesforce. And then we're going to, you know, and it's like, okay, what are you going to actually do with that data once you have it?
So Derek, if you could go back to 2014 or whenever you started this journey towards self-employment, what would you tell yourself to make the process easier or faster or just better?
Yeah, I think about that. And, you know, I hear that question quite a bit. And it's an excellent interview question. I think, you know, a lot of what I've learned where I've gotten from today is, you know, is unfortunately due to, you know, I can't say I've made any bad decisions, but I would say, you know, probably the thing would be you believe in yourself. You got this, you know what you're doing. And people value you, the work you're, that you're doing. And, you know, believe in yourself. It's I'll go back to what I said before, is, you know, confidence begets confidence, that if, you know, like I know this stuff, I can help you. And I will definitely be truthful with you if I can't. You know, being, I guess I would just reinforce that and try and get myself to learn that earlier.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk about where you've come from and where you are today. If folks want to get in touch with you or find out more, where would you direct them?
Yeah, I would say probably, you know, you can find me on Twitter. It's ddysart. So it's ddysart. My corporate website is djdysart. So djdysart.com. And you'll quickly see that I'm not doing any marketing there. That's still, I think, watch this space for updates. But you know, I definitely kind of wrapped up a bunch of projects last year. And I'm trying to move more and more away from kind of the maintenance work into doing kind of more advisory consulting type work, trying to put together some sort of offering to have there. But yeah, Twitter's probably the best way to get a hold of me. Derek, and definitely if somebody's, you know, if you're out there listening to this and definitely kind of struggling or trying to think of, you know, could we do this? I'm more than willing to chat with you. So, you know, hit me up on Twitter.
Really appreciate that, Derek. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah. Thank you.